In Puerto Rico, there's adventure around every corner and natural treasures waiting to be explored, like El Yunque, the only tropical rainforest in the U.S. Get swept away by natural beauty and come away with unique stories that could only be experienced in Puerto Rico and that remind you why you travel in the first place. Visits end, but stories last forever. You don't become a part of the island, it becomes a part of you. No passports required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh, and there's Chuck, and Jerry just left, so it's just me and Chuck being bad boys going through our stamp collection. Oh, yeah.
That's right. The purposefully silent Jerry, by the way.
Yeah, it's her own choice.
Yeah.
She's a real live human being.
Jerry's had plenty of chances. We've asked her, and she loves being in the background and not being on the show. Just want to make that clear.
She's a wallflower.
Mm-hmm.
A lazy, semi-useless wallflower.
That we love like a sister.
That's right.
And who keeps us in line.
And who may or may not even exist.
That's right. Let's talk about stamps, baby.
So I already said we're talking about stamp collecting. Oh, and by the way, this is Stuff You Should Know. I think that it's not an official episode until I say that. What do you think?
That's our watermark.
Okay. Yeah, nice reference, Chuck, because we're going to talk about those later. Wow. You have been doing this for a while, haven't you? A
couple of years.
So we're talking stamp collecting. I don't collect stamps. I never have collected stamps. I've never been friends with somebody who collected stamps.
Me neither.
As far as I know, no relatives have collected stamps.
You ever collect anything?
I collected baseball cards.
Okay.
The huge, you know?
Yeah.
But it turns out I would posit that stamp collecting is vastly more popular than baseball card collecting, as popular as baseball card collecting is.
I think if you're talking worldwide, probably so, yeah.
For sure. Because, I mean, over in some countries, they don't even care about baseball.
Nope.
They're like, I don't even know who Freddie Freeman is. I like the alliteration, but I don't know who he is.
Oh, they should. He's great.
Sure. Man, I remember when he was a rookie.
Do you have a rookie card?
No, I stopped collecting baseball cards when I aged out of the, well, baseball card age.
Yeah, sure.
But yeah, it was long before Freddie Freeman. No, I don't have one of his cards. Do you?
No, I don't collect baseball cards. I collected banks. I think I've talked about that before.
No.
I don't know why. It's weird. I think I just had more than one of them and then said, well, this is a start to something. And I collected, like, I mean, technically they were piggy banks, but none of them were pigs.
Okay, I gotcha.
So, you know, I think I had like 30 or 40 banks at one point when I was a kid, little banks.
I suspected you were talking about banks, like you'd walk around and like slap your hand on like a fifth third and been like, I just collected this bank.
No.
Something like that.
No.
So piggy banks that weren't pigs.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was like just banks, little banks.
Yeah, what was the coolest one you had?
I got one from a Napa Auto Parts that was a car battery bank. That was kind of cool. I remember that stands out in my memory for some reason.
I can imagine, but cool, I don't know, is the right word for it, but okay.
That's the only one I can really remember. I had a Mickey Mouse bank, but who doesn't?
That's a good one, too. I had a Spider-Man piggy bank, the bust of, you know, 1970s Spider-Man.
Wow.
And I broke it open with a hammer and used all the money inside to buy candy and two lunches at school for a stretch. It was like I was walking around like I was the king of England in the cafeteria.
I thought you were going to be like my first pack of cigarettes.
It was just a few short years before then.
But yeah, stamp collecting, I've never known anyone who's done it, but it is hugely popular. Mm-hmm. And it seems like a really kind of lovely, pleasant thing because, as is pointed out here, in this article. Who was this? Was this Ed?
Yeah, Grabster.
It's like, you know, collecting little pieces of art, little tiny works of art.
Exactly. But even more than that, stamps have a very deep, detailed, intricate, arcane history.
Yeah.
And I mean stamps in general, but also every single individual stamp. And the stamp collecting community really loves to dig into that history and sure. know all about all the different stuff about every single stamp. And so there's a lot of information to absorb while you're collecting, which I think is one of the big draws of collecting anything, is the background information to it, too. Definitely, like, look at, you can enjoy a stamp just on its face. It's pretty, mm-hmm. it's neat, it's really well done usually, or at least the ones that are worth collecting.
Serves a
purpose.
But
the idea, sure, that too. But the idea, and it has, you know, a history just from sometimes being old. But mm-hmm. then also the idea that it has a backstory, too. It's just about as well-rounded a hobby as you could find.
Agreed.
So another term for stamp collecting is called philately, philately. It's not the easiest word to spell until you stop and think about it. But it's derived from the words philo, or love of, like philosophy, love of knowledge. But this is love of Italia, and that is exemption from payment. So you would use a stamp to show that whatever you were sending or whatever is exempt from payment. You already paid. So really, philately means love of stamps in a really roundabout way.
Now, see, I heard it pronounced philately.
Oh, really? We'll go with that one then.
Okay.
Because I've just been pronouncing that way in my head for a very long time.
Philately.
There you have it.
Who is that with you?
Her name is mispronunciation.
Emma says mispronunciation. That was good, Chuck.
Yeah, mispronunciation. We're not going to assume anything.
You know, one of the things, very good. One of the things that that I've noticed in QAing episodes is how many jokes of yours slide right past me while you're saying them, and I don't catch them until I'm QAing an episode later on. So,
so many
hats
jokes.
Off for all those jokes that I've missed.
If you're going to get into philately or be a philatelist, then you should know that it's not like a get-rich-quick thing. You do it mm-hmm. sort of for the love of the hobby itself. And as you go along over the years, you may eventually acquire some stamps that may be worth some money. But it's not the kind of thing where just get into it with the intentions that you should have, which is you're not going to make a ton of money doing this kind of thing.
Yeah, get into it for the love of collecting stamps. That's yeah. the way to do it. Yeah, that's kind of eye-opening and surprising, I think, to most of us on the outside of the philately world looking in, because, you know, we hear about these auctions where stamps go for millions of dollars.
And sure.
every once in a while, they'll pop up as like a MacGuffin in a movie or something like that. So the idea that almost all stamps, or the wildly vast majority of stamps, are really not worth much at all is kind of surprising, or it was to me at least. But it just makes me love stamp collectors that much more, you know?
Yeah, and I think one thing I really love about stamp collecting, which is sort of toward the end of this research, but I'll go ahead and say it now, is that it seems like the stamp collecting purists only collect stamps that are actually used to mail things. Yep. Like, get out of here with your special edition collector thing that is just printed up for some certain, you know, to give to a dignitary. Like, they want stamps, like mm-hmm. mail-in letter stamps.
That's right. And as a matter of fact, there's a kind of considered one of the big authorities on stamps, the Scott Catalog. They apparently don't even recognize stamps that aren't released by governments for the purposes of mailing postage to the general public. If it's not released like that by those authorities, then it doesn't exist as far as that's concerned.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like part of the fun is finding these things on an old letter,
mm-hmm.
like a cool discovery. And I like the idea of it. I'm probably not going to get into it just because I don't have the time for this kind of thing, but sure. I can certainly appreciate it.
And then there's one other aspect of it, too, that I kind of turned up from this, and I'm sure it's not entirely correct across the board, but it seems like a person's stamp collection is a very personal thing.
Mm-hmm.
It says, like, I'm interested in this.
Yeah,
so
totally.
I went to the trouble of finding these things. And in that sense, it almost bears a resemblance to that super adorable coin collection that Owen had in Throw Mama from the Train. Remember when he pulls out his coin collection and instead of some rare coins, it's like a quarter that he got change for when he was at Coney Island with his dad when he was 12. It's kind of like that, you know. It's a really endearing hobby, I think.
Yeah, because it's not like you're like, all right, I'm going to get into stamp collecting and, you know, what are the best stamps to collect for...
Right.
You know, the best stamps to collect are the ones that speak to you. So if you get into it for a little while and you're like, boy, the stamps from the Roaring Twenties really are pretty cool looking to me, or stamps with dogs on them. Mm-hmm. Or you could collect many, many kinds of stamps. But a lot of people sort of get into stamp collecting and realize I like these kinds of stamps. So that's what my collection's going to reflect.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Very cool.
So that's stamp collecting, everybody.
Should we take a break?
Should we already? Sure, let's do it. Chuck, let's throw caution to the wind like every average stamp collector does.
Great.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on!
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, we're back. And we should say, Chuck, I think if this seems a little weird, if the tone seems a little weird today, this is one of our less than usual Thursday recording sessions. So it's always a little like more footloose, you know what I mean?
Sure. My feet are very loose.
So we should probably give some terms here if you're interested in getting a stamp collector. If you just want to know a little more about it, there is a lot of arcane jargon and slang in the world of stamp collecting. And one of the reasons why it's been around for almost a couple hundred years now. And over that time, there's just kind of been successive generations who've kind of added and refined and contributed to it. But they all have to know what they're talking about to one another. So they've kind of come up with a bunch of different terms to describe things.
Yeah, like in True Stuff You Should Know fashion, this is a broad overview. There are entire podcasts dedicated to this kind of thing.
Right.
So we're going to go over some of those broad definitions. And the first one we have to talk about is the gum, which is that sticky stuff that killed George Costanza's wife. or fiance.
Well, hers was from licking envelopes, right? Or was it stamps?
Oh, I guess it was envelopes, wasn't it? But the same thing. Enough. It's still gum.
Exactly. I forgot about that.
Yeah, because he got the cheap stuff. Yeah,
he cheaped out.
So this is what's used to stick the stamp on. If the stamp has never been used at all, it's like this pristine little thing. It's called full original gum. Mm-hmm. And then it's called new gum if you have a stamp and you want to add a little gum to it to stick it into your collection, which we'll get to as well.
Yeah. So the sticky stuff equals gum, right? Pretty Correct. Simple. Let's get a little more complex, Chuck.
Ooh.
What's a block?
A block is a group of stamps that are still connected to their little friends, mm-hmm. but it's got to be at least four and they can't be four in a row either. For my research, it's two and two. It's got to be a square block.
Yeah, I saw that there, as long as there are four, it can be irregular shapes because sometimes blocks of stamps get added to or messed with or just changed over the decades or the centuries. So I've seen that more than that, but in a less regular shape is still considered a block.
But what about four in a row in a strip? Does that count as a block?
I believe so. I think as long as it's at least four and that there is, although I guarantee there's another arcane term for what you just said.
Right.
But as long as it's sure. not all of the ones that were originally attached together, that would be a sheet.
Okay. All right. Sure.
Okay.
All right. Now where are we?
One other thing about stamps that you have to realize is, you know, you tend to think if you collect things, when you collect things that are not quite right, mm-hmm. like a slightly off version of what it's supposed to be, that it would be much more expensive and collectible. And in some cases, that's true. Like there is somebody in the stamp collecting world that is collecting stuff that nobody else is. Like there's always going to be somebody out there who wants something. But in the stamp world, you want something as precise and pristine and centered and perfectly done as possible. That usually tends to be the higher valued stamp. The other kind that are just kind of off, the printing was slightly off center, that kind of thing, those are called errors, freaks, and oddities, EFOs, in the stamp collecting world.
Yeah. Those are It's like you're talking about if like there's an Obi-Wan Kenobi mm-hmm. figure that mm-hmm. the first 1,000 that they made, he was missing a left ear.
Right.
In that world, that would be the most valuable thing probably ever made.
Exactly.
In the history of the world. But yeah, like you're saying with stamps, they generally want, as far as value goes, they want them that are nice and tidy.
Right. But so, I mean, with those terms, errors, freaks, and oddities, those are just kind of wildly overstating what they describe. Like, we're talking about a stamp that's just, the printing is slightly off center.
Right.
Or the perforations are just a little bit off or whatever, yeah. maybe kind of half go through there. That would be considered a freak. You know, like, that's how mm-hmm. precise stamp printing is meant to be. So, some people do collect that, but for the most part, yeah, you want as close to perfect a stamp as possible.
That sounds like a record album title.
Errors, Freaks, and Oddities?
Yeah, like a
sure.
the best of Guided by Voices or something.
That's a good one. Or just a, you know, off-brand Discovery Network channel's new show. Right,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, totally.
So there's cancellations, too. That's another good term to learn if you're getting into stamp collecting. And everybody knows a canceled stamp. It's where they take a, like a ink stamp, mm-hmm. stamp over the postage stamp, and it's canceled. You can't reuse it. It's meant to say, this has been used. It's okay. Let it through the mail, but don't try to reuse it again. And that's right. a canceled stamp.
But and, it's still, you can still collect those stamps. In fact,
yeah.
you know, most stamps I think that people collect have been used and found on these letters, which we'll talk about, that are called covers. But mm-hmm. Sometimes that postmark is on the stamp itself, and sometimes it is off to the side, and, you know, because it's not those people at the post office. They're just stamping those things. They got a lot of work to do.
Right.
So sometimes you'll just barely get a little bit of cancellation on the stamp, and the rest of the goodness, including the date and where it was mailed from, might be just on the envelope itself.
Yeah, and there's a lot of information that can be contained in just a plain old cancellation stamp.
some, you know, like some people collect disaster stamps. So like if you had a letter that was postmarked, or an envelope and a stamp that was postmarked on September 11th, 2001 in New York, yeah, somebody's probably collecting, you know, canceled stamps and covers like that.
Interesting. I never really thought about that. That makes perfect sense.
Also, while we're talking about the people working at the post office, I feel we would be remiss if we did this whole episode without doing a shout out to our favorite postal worker, Van Nostrand.
That's right.
The great state of Washington.
And I don't know where the ads fall, but if there's a stamps.com ad on this, total coincidence.
That's right. Some people I saw collect machined stamps, metered postage too.
Hey, and like you said, there's probably a subset out there for kind of anything.
There definitely is. Every rule you see, there's some rebel group out there breaking it in the philately world.
The cover is what I mentioned. Don't you dare call it an envelope.
Yeah. You'd really reveal yourself to be an uneducated rube if you did that.
Which there's probably a word for that, too.
Yeah.
Like a beginner philatelist is...
A gum licker.
A gum licker. That's good. So... The cover, like I said, is the envelope. Sometimes you will keep that whole envelope at least for a little while. Sometimes it's a little, you know, they're easier to hang on to than a tiny stamp sometimes. So you might not want to cut it out right away, and you can keep up with those envelopes until you want to get that stamp off. Or like we said, if it's got some of the really valuable information that makes that stamp special is on the cover itself, you may want to keep the whole thing forever and just have it on the envelope.
Right. And again, these are things that people pay attention to in the stamp world or collect. And then there's another thing that you know, most of us who just use stamps as like normal human beings have noticed but don't really pay much attention to are the perforations that we use to separate stamps. Mm-hmm. Like way back in the day, stamps came in sheets, and you, colonial person or, you know, second industrial age inhabitant, were expected to pull out your scissors and cut the stamps into, you know, little individual singles. Then finally, an Irishman named Henry Archer from Dublin came up with a perforation tool. And all you're doing is making the paper at certain points thinner so that it's easily torn at those points. And so the first perforated stamp that came out was the 1850 British Penny Red, which is pretty quickly after stamps were first invented, postal stamps. And with that, Henry Archer created this whole subcategory of stamp, I guess, categorization. Mm-hmm. A subcategory of categorization. That is categorical. But stamp collecting people, philatelists, I like it the way I say it more, philatelists. No, I should probably say philatelist now that I say it out loud. So philatelists really pay attention to perforations. That's like a really important part of stamp collecting.
Yeah, because it can be a big clue. I mean, it can be a clue as to where it actually came from, because these people know how they have perforated things with different machines in different parts of the world in different eras. Mm-hmm. So it can be a very big clue as to the age of the stamp and where it came from. If they don't have those perforations, they're called imperforate. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I talked about the little strips of stamps, the coils. Those obviously are just going to have the perforations on the sides and not the top.
Or the top, just not both.
Interesting. I've never really, I guess it depends on which way the art is oriented, right?
Exactly, yeah.
And then you've got the sheets or the pane. And if it's on the outer edges of that sheet or pane, it probably won't have those perforations either. And it is a big deal. You'd be surprised.
Yeah, and those outer margins even have their own word, Chuck, selvage, which also applies to, like, you know, the hem of, like, your shirt or something that's sewn in a certain way to keep it from unraveling. That's called selvage, too. But in the stamp collecting world, it's basically the margins, the sheets. And sometimes they have, you know, registration marks or dates or, you know, the number of the print run printed in there. Some people collect that, of course, as well. Selvage stamps.
I love learning new words.
Selvage.
I learned one yesterday. Parapet. Mm-hmm. You know what that is?
No. I mean, I've seen it before. I just cannot bring to mind what it means.
It's like the little, and I learned this because, and I was going to tell you this anyway. I had our buddy Wyatt Sinek on Movie Crush yesterday.
Oh, cool. What did he talk about?
Blazing Saddles. And there's a scene where, and I've seen Blazing Saddles probably 36 times. It's up there with Spinal Tap as far as comedies that I've seen.
Okay.
And I know it basically by heart. And there's a scene where Mel Brooks as Governor LePetitmain comes into the room and he said, "Sorry, gentlemen, I was just out walking the parapet." And I never bothered to look up what that meant until yesterday. And it's the little, if you're on top of a building, it's the little half wall that goes around the top of a building to keep you from falling off or to make falling off, you know, more interesting.
Yeah, right. Really banks up the shins on your way down.
So I never knew that before, walking the parapet.
Oh, yeah, okay. So he was saying like he was basically walking on the edge of a high wall?
I guess a low wall, yeah.
Low wall, high up.
With his selvage.
I got you. Oh, boy. So let's say, Chuck, that you said, I care about perforations. I want to know more about these registration marks on selvage. How do I get into this philately as a hobby, Chuck? What would you recommend people do to start?
Get a bank loan for about $15,000. No, it's really one of the cool things about stamp collecting is it's a very low barrier to entry. You need to get these little special tongs, these little baby tweezers with rounded tips. And, you know, if your skin oils can mar a stamp, so you want to try and handle them with these little tweezers so you don't ruin them. That's a good little tool to have. You're going to want to get an album or a binder, and they make them especially, you know, don't get one for like photographs. They make them specially for stamps.
Right.
And sometimes they have little pockets that you can slip them in that are adorable. And sometimes they have hinges, which are little strips of paper with a little bit of gum on them to put the stamps on. You might want a magnifying glass or a jeweler's loop, but you don't need a microscope or anything. I think about a 10X is probably the most kind of magnification you'll need.
Yes. Eventually, too, you're going to find that you have perforation fever.
Yes.
And you're going to get yourself a perf gauge.
Oh, boy.
Which is basically a specialized transparent ruler that you line up the lines to the perforation marks. And the gauge of a perforation is how many perforation holes there are per 2 centimeters.
So cool.
And this is important because, you know, some stamps are exactly the same as other stamps. The only difference is like they were printed on, they were perforated with slightly different machines or something like that. Or, you know, like the stamp collecting community knows when a perforating machine's pin breaks. They know about that machine and its pin. So they can tell you where that thing was printed and when and what run it was out of how many, just because there's a what's called a blind perforation where the hole wasn't punched through where it should have been.
Yeah.
In the one position on this one stamp. Like that's how intensely known stamps are by the philately community. It's really cool.
I think that's one thing I like about it is how myopic it can get and how specific it can get. It's just, you know, it's time well spent, and I bet it's very calming.
Yes. Yeah, just researching it is calming, you know?
I fell asleep a few times.
Stuff like that really comes through. When you're researching something and you find you're relaxed, the thing you're doing would be even more relaxing,
yes,
I think.
Yes, totally. You know?
Like making flies or painting like duck decoys.
Yeah,
like
that, yeah. You know? I love that. Or painting stamps like in Fargo. Margie's stamp. Husband. I love it. Yeah. It's just the 2 cent.
Norm.
Norm was great. I love it.
Yeah, he was great.
So you might want a internet connection. you will probably want to get a stamp catalog, and we'll talk about the sort of the big books that are out there in a bit. But all of this stuff is basically online now. But you also might like having a book. If you're into stamps, I bet you dollars to donuts, you might rather hold a book in your hand.
Every time you say that, you said that on Tuesday, too, in one of the episodes.
Did I? And
yeah, every time you say that, I think of this one Simpsons where Homer goes, "Deal," and puts his dollar down.
It's weird because I don't really say that expression much, but I've said it twice in a week.
Yeah, you definitely did because I thought about it the other day, too.
I also did that dumb What We Do in the Shadows guy in like two episodes in a row.
Yeah, and another point too, it's so funny because I think it's a mild transgression when we kind of cop one another's words.
Uh-huh.
You use droll.
I did.
I can't remember what episode, but you said droll, and then I used it recently too after that. And as I was saying it, I was like, Chuck, that's a Chuck word. Yeah, and I just used it. Is it okay if I use that word? So
it's fine. I'll lend you droll.
Thank you, buddy. I appreciate that.
You might want Watermark Detector Fluid. Actually, that's a pretty good album name too.
Sure.
Sometimes stamps will have an anti-counterfeiting measure put in place with a watermark. And sometimes you can hold up a stamp to the light and see the watermark. And sometimes you will need to dive a bit deeper and put that watermark detector fluid on there. Mm-hmm. And it's not that much money, but it's not necessarily the first thing you need in your kit as a beginning gum licker.
Right. I mean, you're going to basically just be looking at, well, that's a neat picture. I like that picture. Like, that's a cool stamp. And then eventually you'll be like, what's on the back? What's the secret hidden message that I'm missing on this?
That's right.
I also saw there's machines that you can get for about $250 basically like those, you know, those old-timey projector things that they'd use in class?
Like an overhead projector?
Yes.
Yeah.
But this is one that projects into some sort of magnifier that you lean over and look into. There's like a light bulb, and you don't have to use any fluid. It doesn't have any impact on your stamp whatsoever. It's just shows you the watermark. It's pretty neat.
All right. I'm in.
That's for the well-heeled philatelists, though.
I'm out.
So there's another thing you need that's really, really important. It's a basic part of stamp collecting. That is stamps.
That's right. And if you're just getting started, one thing you can do is go online and you can buy just a lot or a collection of stamps, sort of a grab bag that you have no idea what's in there. And that can be a really fun way to get started because, like I mentioned earlier, that's where you might poke through and get inspired and say, you know what, it turns out I really like this particular kind of stamp or two. And I think that might be what my focus should be. And that's a good way to find that out.
Yeah. I mean, getting a grab bag of anything is a good way to really find out who you really are.
Yeah, agreed.
You know?
Sure.
So, and that is something you can do. You can order it online. If you live in a big enough city, there's probably a stamp collecting store.
Yeah.
You can also, like, I read this pamphlet by, I think, the American Philately Association or Society, APS, I believe. Mm-hmm. They wrote the pamphlet. And they, philatelic. Damn that word. Okay, philatelic. I think I got it right.
Yeah.
Okay, the American Philatelic Association, man, the APS had a pamphlet, and they basically said, if you're a little kid and you don't have any money because your parents don't give you an allowance or anything, you could still get into stamp collecting. And they give all these ideas of how to get free stamps.
Stealing mail.
Go to like offices and be like, hey, you got any mail? You guys get a lot of mail. You got any envelopes you don't want anymore? Or find a pen pal in another country because they'll have stamps that are a dime a dozen to them. But to you, it's a foreign stamp and you can just start sending each other letters with, you know, cool stamps.
Yeah.
Or even stamps inside the envelope. Who knows? There's a lot of ways to get into stamp collecting basically for free or for the cost maybe of a stamp. That which is again one of the reasons why stamp collecting is just so accessible. It costs next to nothing to get into, to get started with, and even when you really get into it, it's not an expensive hobby.
No, and if you get a bunch of stamps or you get a bunch of covers with stamps, and you're just beginning your journey, you're gonna get them all, lay them out in a room, look at them, decide what you like, and you don't want to just remove all the, I mean, you can do whatever you want, but I would advise that you decide what you want to separate from the cover, because there is a process involved that we're going to go over now, and it's not the hardest thing in the world, but you don't want to do that to 20 or 30 stamps that you're like, nah, I actually don't like these after all.
It's a waste of time. Who wants
I mean, it's like that next level of preservation. And once you have picked those out, what you do is you get a bowl with warm water, warm tap water.
Mm-hmm. Stick your finger in until you lose control of your bladder. And then you start the stamp sorting process.
That's right. You go pee-pee just a little bit. And then you float that stamp. If you have cut it away from the cover, if you've decided to do that, leave yourself a few centimeters around the stamp. You know, don't get too close.
Yeah, but you make a good point. You want to go through everything first and be like, are there any cool, cancellations on here? Is this envelope just neat?
Yeah.
You don't necessarily want to separate all stamps from envelopes.
Or any covers. Rad perfs.
Exactly. So you want to make that decision first. And then once you decide that you want just the stamp, then you start cutting out and leave a little envelope around it.
Right. So you float that little bad boy in some warm tap water.
Stamp up, right?
Yeah, you got to float it stamp up. And you can do a few at a time, but I wouldn't get too crazy if you're just a little gum licker. And I would wade into those warm waters. And if it's from a Christmas envelope or something, if it's like a red envelope.
Beware.
Yes, beware, because that can very much discolor your stamp. Hopefully, it's just like a good old-fashioned white envelope. Wait about 10 or 15 minutes, and that stamp will start to, that gum will just sort of dissolve away, and that stamp will kind of separate, and then float off on its own. Get those tongs, those little tweezers out. Mm-hmm. You don't want to just grab it with your grimy old human fingers. And just kind of pat it dry, and you've got yourself a stamp.
Yeah, you want to be really careful, though, because a wet stamp is unsurprisingly very fragile.
Yeah.
A lot of people put their wet stamps on paper towels. You want to make sure you've gotten all the gum off first, though. And then they put those paper towels in a heavy book and then let it dry like that. What we just described is philatelic. State of the art, basically.
That's right.
So you want to take another break and then come back and talk a little stamp history, famous stamps, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I love this part. Let's do that.
Okay. All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on!
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Today's episode is brought to you by Altoids because, let's face it, unraveling the mysteries of the universe is tough work. But with Altoids, your breath will be stronger than a black hole's gravitational pull, more intense than an alien abduction, and more reliable than your phone's battery during a podcast marathon. When it comes to needing intense freshness, Altoids have you covered. Altoids are stronger than your favorite conspiracy theory, more intense than the latest true crime docuseries, and more reliable than a Bigfoot sighting. They're not just mints, they're curiously strong mints. Find Altoids in the checkout aisle. Grab your tin today.
Hey, everybody, if you're building a deck at work and you want to supercharge it, check out Canva Presentations. Work docs have been the same for too long, but Canva docs are different. They're visual. They grab readers' attention with images, charts, tables, and videos playable right in the doc. Plus, docs don't have to be just words on a page. You can make your docs pop with Canva docs.
That's right. And Canva Presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, HR, ops, marketing, and more, Canva Presentations can be the solution for you. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it.
Canva Presentations might be the most visually impressive presentations you'll ever use. Start with a stunning template, use it as a springboard for your design, adding images, graphics, charts, data visualizations, all from a massive media library. It's super easy to wow any audience with Canva Presentations.
So start designing today at canva.com, designed for work. That's canva.com.
All right. So you mentioned stamp history. They've been collecting stamps since the first stamp, which is kind of cool. I don't know why someone said, you know, I want to hang on to this, but someone did. And after May 1st, 1840, Great Britain issued the penny black, the very first postage stamp. It was supposed to roll out on May 6th as far as being used. But they sent them out a little bit early to post offices. So they were ready to go on May 6th. Mm-hmm. And some post offices said, let's just go ahead and kind of get the ball rolling because I have a feeling we're going to be behind really quickly. And so some of those little penny blacks are dated earlier than May 6th, and those will be worth a little bit more money. But they are not – like there were a bunch of penny blacks, so it's not like the Honus Wagner baseball card.
Right.
It's not like the penny black is the most valuable stamp ever made. It's a little counterintuitive, but – rarity for any collection is what makes it valuable, and they're just not as rare as you might think.
Right, but that's a good example of that cancellation that people will collect.
Yeah.
Because you want a canceled penny black that predates that May 6th, 1840 date because it's just unusual and rare.
Totally.
That's also, I think, May 1st. So May 1st was the date where they started issuing them, even though that was 5 days early. So that would be what's called a first day cover. It's an envelope with a stamp that's canceled on the first day of issue. And sometimes there's even a special stamp that they'll use, say, first day issue. People collect covers like that, too. They even have, like, ceremonies for these kind of things.
They
especially,
do.
I swear to God, if they're releasing a commemorative stamp in particular, there's
yeah.
definitive stamps, which are your everyday, you know, American flag forever stamp, that they basically release in unlimited quantities. Then there's commemorative stamps. They usually have a more limited run. They're available for a limited time. They often commemorate a person, an event, something like that. And when they release those stamps, they'll have like a ceremony at a specific post office in a specific city with dignitaries and famous people there sometimes. They'll print programs and everything. And if you're a stamp collector, you want to be at that first day ceremony, or at the very least, you're collecting those kind of covers too, if that's the kind of thing you're into.
Yeah, I think it's kind of awesome that when you go to the post office still and you go and ask for a book of stamps, mm-hmm. if you have no interest at all in stamp collecting, they will present you usually with a few things and go, what kind of stamps you want?
What do you have?
And anecdotally, I can say that most people choose something rather than saying, I don't care. I just want something to mail something.
Stop asking me questions.
I've been plenty of post offices and most people go, oh, those dogs look nice. I'll take those.
Yeah. Dogs playing poker, even better.
It's cute. I love it. I pick out my stamps. I don't spend a lot of time on it, but if they present me with a few, I'll kind of give them a quick once over and say, mm-hmm. well, I'd like to mail. That represents me a little bit. And that's kind of what it is.
Give me those Mr. Rogers stamps.
Oh, are there some? I'm sure there is.
Yeah, I'll bring you one. I'll Shut mail up. You something with one on it. How about
do you
that?
Really have some?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, okay. Send me something for sure.
I will.
You mentioned the first day cover, though. People will collect first day covers of just very regular, commonly issued stamps just because it's a first day cover.
Right.
Because you never know. That thing might be worth something one day.
Right. But that's what I'm saying. That's what they have those ceremonies for, too, sometimes.
Yeah.
And then if you have, like, a something that's designed or a design that's printed on a stamp, it's called a cachet. Yet another arcane jargon term.
And America, people spend a lot of time, by the way. I looked up into the cachet world.
Uh-huh.
And there are stamp collectors that very much get into making their own cachets and special-made cachets. And it's a whole other subset as well.
Yeah, it's basically, you know, if you've ever seen an envelope with a stamp of an angel blowing a trumpet around Christmas time or something like that, that's cachet.
Well, I mean, a cachet is an additional, like, ink stamp put on the envelope. Yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
Oh, okay.
Like a stamp. Yeah, I know. We need another term.
I think that's what confused
me. Rubber ink stamp. A rubber ink stamp of an angel blowing a horn around Christmas time.
I gotcha.
So America got into the Stamp Releasing Act about less than a decade after Great Britain did. And Great Britain, by the way, being the first nation on the planet to issue postage stamps, didn't bother to put the nation of origin. If you look at every other stamp ever issued by a government authority, it has the nation on it somewhere. There's some signifier that this came from America or Zimbabwe or something like that. Great Britain still to this day doesn't, because they were the first, and so they still don't put Great Britain or UK or anything on their stamps.
That's right. It's pretty cool.
Yep. So America got into it in 1847, July 1st, no less. There was a 5-cent Benjamin Franklin, a 10-cent George Washington, and what else did we need, you know?
Yeah, and this is not, you know, it can get confusing when you think of, like, the Stamp Act and, you know, stamping tea and things like that. Those were different kinds of stamps. We used to stamp tax bills and permits, and any kind of government sort of thing, exchange might be stamped. That is a revenue stamp, and it's sort of just a different world. Like, if you collect postage stamps, you might also collect revenue stamps. But you keep them separate. You don't put them together.
you don't tell your friends who collect postage stamps that you're collecting revenue or fiscal stamps. That's your dirty secret.
Postage stamps are kind of where the bread and butter is for stamp collecting, I think.
So like we said before, the kind of like one of the recognized authorities on stamp collecting and stamps in general is the Scott Catalog, which has been produced from a company in Ohio since 1868. And they basically just started tracking stamp after stamp. So the lower the number associated with the stamp that the Scott Catalog has given that stamp, the earlier the stamp was released. And so over time, it's grown into, I think, a 12-volume collection catalog, the Scott Catalog has. But it's so widely known and widely used that a lot of stamps are described and talked about by their Scott Catalog number rather than, you know, whatever common name they have.
Right. And there are prefixes and suffixes. If there are different special issued stamps or some of those errors you were talking about, or some rad purse, the inverted Jenny, which we'll talk about in a minute, like that's known as C3A in the stamp world.
Because the C denotes airmail stamps.
Yeah, which is great and a little counterintuitive.
A little bit, sure.
It would be an A in my world.
You would think so, but I think A is for awesome. The most awesome stamps is what the A is reserved for.
There's also the Michel catalog from Germany, and that is around to fill in the gaps that the Scott Guide does not cover, because the Scott Guide is American, and they're like, we don't want Cuban stamps in our book.
Can you believe it?
Yeah, it's weird. If there are nations that are embargoed or whatever, sometimes they will not be. I think North Korean stamps, too, are not in the Scott catalog. So the Michel catalog comes around because they're German, and they're like, sure, we'll cover it. It's fine.
Sure. So it turns out that there's actually been a pretty decent amount of famous people who collect stamps. Just because there's so many people who collect stamps, some of them are bound to be famous, right?
John Lennon.
Yeah, I read about his stamp collecting. He seems to have inherited his cousin Stanley's stamp collection, basically changed the name on the cover of the album to his name, and then, you know, added a few more stamps. He doesn't seem to have been a passionate philatelist by any stretch from what I see.
All right.
Ayn Rand was.
Yeah.
I know. And then Patrick Dempsey, I saw referenced here or there.
McDreamy?
Yeah. Ooh. And then Queen Elizabeth II, apparently, is a stamp collector.
Okay.
And then Sally Ride was a very famous philatelist as well and ended up on a stamp herself.
Yes, sadly. This is something that I think is super cool. The fact
Sally Ride was fine. She didn't die in an accident.
Oh,
she died
right.
later in life.
Yeah,
That was Krista McAuliffe.
That's who I was thinking of.
Did you ever see that Challenger documentary yet?
I still haven't. It's in my queue.
Oh, man, it is just astounding. You can't believe it. I can't believe the interviews that they got and what they got the people to finally admit to. It's crazy.
Amazing. Amelia Earhart, I think this is super cool. She actually funded some of her aviation expeditions, including some of those transatlantic flights with stamps. She would get covers and she would sometimes they were cached, and she would get stamps and she would fly to places and get them postmarked. And it would be obviously super valuable. She might even sign it sometimes and sell them. And this would be like, boy, this is a cover and a stamp from Amelia Earhart's flight across the ocean, stamped here and in like England or something, or stamped in England or canceled, I guess, in England.
Right.
And when she went down in that plane, there were five with along with poor Fred Noonan.
Poor Fred.
There were 5,000 covers that she had pre-sold to fund that flight that were stamped and postmarked for her stops around the world. Very cool fact.
That brought to mind the mail on the Titanic. Remember we were making fun of people dropping off their mail? Apparently there was a lot of mail on the Titanic, and I didn't think about it, but it wasn't just people dropping off their mail, passengers on the Titanic mailing postcards. RMS stands for Royal Mail Ship. So the RMS Titanic was a mail carrier too. So it was carrying British and Irish and European mail over to America as well. And from what I could tell, none of it survived. There's a surviving letter that was not mailed. It was written on Titanic letterhead, but it was kept in somebody's belongings. But I guess all of the mail workers on the Titanic died basically trying to save the mail, but they were unable to, and it's still down there. But they think it's possible some of it's still preserved, and they might bring it up someday.
President Roosevelt was a very dedicated stamp collector. FDR, pre-presidency and then through his presidency, which was many, many years. And this is interesting in that the president has the ear of the Postmaster General.
I know, it seems unfair.
Well, I mean, I think it's kind of cool, though. Like, he got into it, and he wasn't just like, yeah, just print a bunch of stamps, it's fine, like every other president. In the 1930s, he got together with General James A. Farley of the Postmaster General and said, you know, let's help. I want to help design these things and let's brainstorm colors and themes and designs. And
what
he
if he
sketched
was
out design?
What if he was terrible at it? And Farley would see him come in, just roll like, his eyes like, oh, here comes another bad idea from FDR. All of his stick figures had like gigantic hands and stuff. But he was the president, so Farley had to release those stupid stamps.
That's pretty funny. But it's kind of cool, though. He did sketch out ideas, apparently. And in his collection, he had some full sheets and he had some die proofs and stuff like that. So he did have an advantage for sure.
Yeah, apparently they used to release a lot of pictures of him collecting stamps as part of like calm reassurance to the nation that there was like a steady hand, literally and figuratively, in leading the country, which is kind of cool.
Can we talk about the Inverted Jenny, the coolest stamp
Finally.
Of all time?
Yeah, there's a bunch of famous stamps. We should say the Inverted Jenny is not the most the most valuable stamp. That goes to the British Guiana magenta, right?
Yeah, which it isn't that great looking, but it's just rare, I guess.
I think there's only one of it in existence, the British Guiana 1 cent magenta. But the far and away, the Inverted Jenny is the most famous stamp of all time. Has to be.
Yeah, so in 1918, the U.S. commissioned a stamp to commemorate the first airmail service going on. And so they decided on a two-color stamp with a plane on it, a Curtiss JN4. And when you do something with two colors, you print the first thing. In this case, it was the red frame around the plane. And then the second thing that they would print would be the blue plane itself. And there was an error at one point, and there were a few panes where it was flipped upside down, and it was either the sheet or the printing plate was upside down, and so the Ginny was inverted, mm-hmm. and you've got this upside down plane, and all of a sudden stamp collectors get wind of this, and they're like, oh my gosh, there was a mistake. Mm-hmm. We need to get our hands on some of these.
Yeah, this guy named William Roby showed up at the printing press and said, do you have any that are messed up, that are upside down? And they had found that they had printed some accidentally, and all but one sheet was destroyed. So 100 inverted Jennies were produced, which makes it not one of the rare stamps around. Remember that British Guiana one set Magenta? There's only one. There's right. only one Benjamin Franklin Z-Grill. There's 100 of these things. But people just love them. They go bonkers for them. And as a matter of fact, one of the reasons why the inverted Jennies become such a sought-after part of the stamp collecting world is because it's just been in the spotlight so much. Like, there have been some really high-profile thefts mm-hmm. of inverted Jennies over the years. There was one block of four called the McCoy block that was stolen in 1955, and every couple decades, one of them's recovered, and there's a big to-do about it. There was another theft from the New York Public Library in 1977 that was finally recovered years later. It's just something about that stamp makes it the most famous of all time.
That's right. And in this one case, there was a dealer, or there was this man who purchased the sheet, sold it to a dealer. Mm-hmm. Dealer sells it to this wealthy businessman. And the dealer had penciled in numbers on the back of these stamps mm-hmm. individually so you could identify the stamps, which, of course, it was not in mint condition, but they were at least identifiable. And I think the story goes that one of these was stolen, and it turned up in the 80s with the perforations cut off, mm-hmm. and the number on the back was changed to a 9, which wasn't a stamp that had ever been circulated. So they knew that it was the stolen stamp.
Right, but they thought that it could have been this 9 that had never been circulated, that had made its way into circulation. But it wasn't until 2002 when a woman's locket, the wife of Colonel Edward Green, the guy who bought that original block of 100, that businessman, she died and her locket made its way into auction. And somebody opened it up and found that the inverted Jenny in the number 9 position was actually in the locket. So the other one was found to be a fraud that way, which is just, you can't write this stuff, you know?
I think you meant Colonel Mustard. It's Mr. Green.
I know. I thought the same thing. Professor Plum.
Pretty cool story, though. Yeah. I think the last one in 2019 sold for 1.35 mil. So
yeah, there was a block of them, I think.
Not the most valuable, but pretty pricey.
Plus, also, it made its way into one of the better movies that came out of the 80s, Brewster's Millions, remember?
Oh, sure. Was that in there?
Yeah, he burned up like a bunch of money by mailing a postcard using the inverted Jenny as mail.
Oh, that's a fun fact.
Yeah, pretty cool, huh?
I love it. And that ties in with Blazing Saddles because Richard Pryor almost played Sheriff Bart.
Oh, nice. What is the name of the actor who did instead?
Cleavon Little, who was great. That's right. But yeah. Richard Pryor was a writer on the movie.
Okay. You got anything else about Richard Pryor or philately?
Nope.
Neither do I. But there is a ton out there. Like, I read an article about how the serial number that's written on the side of the plane on the inverted Jenny and how philatelists got to the bottom of why that serial number was used. Like, I mean, there is a lot of information out there, and there's a lot of stamps to collect. So go forth and try out a new hobby and see what you think. And since I said go forth, that means, of course, it's time for listener mail.
I'm going to call this heartfelt thanks. Hey guys, as we mark the 1-year anniversary of the COVID lockdown, I'm compelled to write and thank you for what you've done, what you do, and hopefully what you will continue to do. Sure. Yours was my first podcast subscription from several years back. And as a stay-at-home mom that has, that list has grown substantially across several genres, and I'm plugged in constantly when I clean, cook, exercise, etc. When lockdown was first initiated here in California, I tried to keep as normal a schedule as possible, despite all three of my children relegated to home for distance learning. None of my at least dozen podcasts seemed appropriate to absorb except for yours. The funny ones seemed too trivial, the crime ones too gruesome, the history ones too dry, and none could keep my attention. Again, except for yours. Your show is such the perfect balance between knowledge, lightheartedness, sincerity, and understanding, and the true friendship radiates from your voices, and it's incredibly soothing. I revisited your past episodes for 10 months before I was able to keep listening to anything else. I'm sure I'm not alone when I say I don't know how I would have gotten through this past year without you two filtering out all the negative vibes in my head. You two are the bestest friends I've never met. Keep on keeping on. And that is Zenaida Johnson of San Jose, California.
Man, that was a bang-up email, Zenaida. Thank you very much for that.
It is. And believe it or not, we need to hear that stuff, too. So we really yeah. appreciate it.
Yeah. I mean, I'll never get tired of hearing that. But it's all, you know, it's just, we talk about a pat on the back, you know, being... Hearing that we help people get through the pandemic is, that's about as high praise as you can get these days.
Means a lot.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Zenaida. We're glad that we could help you out and everybody who we helped out and everybody who we slightly annoyed or made laugh or did anything over the last year or 13 years. Thank you for listening. How about that?
If you want to get,
thank you. If you want to get in touch with us like Zenaida, is it Zenaida or Zenaida?
Zenaida. She even was kind enough to put a little pronunciation guide.
Very nice. If you want to get in touch with us like Zenaida did, then you can send us an email to stuff. Oh, wait. Don't forget to lick a stamp and slap it on the bottom with that stamp and then send it off to stuffpodcast@iheartradio.com.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
Today's episode is brought to you by Altoids because, let's face it, unraveling the mysteries of the universe is tough work. But with Altoids, your breath will be stronger than a black hole's gravitational pull, more intense than an alien abduction, and more reliable than your phone's battery during a podcast marathon. When it comes to needing intense freshness, Altoids have you covered. Altoids are stronger than your favorite conspiracy theory, more intense than the latest true crime docuseries, and more reliable than a Bigfoot sighting. They're not just mints, they're curiously strong mints. Find Altoids in the checkout aisle. Grab your tin today.